Yep.
When you're riding after rattlesnakes, you gotta be tough. You gotta be rough. You gotta shoot straight. Be on the lookout. The James Gang is back in town, and they're meaner than ever. There's Brother Eli. He stomped down many a snake in his day, and he ain't done yet. His younger brother Dave, quicker than a horned toad, he can hunt down a snake's lie. Then there's Sister Jean. She can whip out a scripture faster than a Colt 45. Yeah! 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 Wanted, dead or alive, they'll be coming for you. It's the James Gang on GearFolkRadio.com.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is GearFolk Radio. Today is January 28th, 2017, and this is One to One. And today we're going to be talking about who started World War II. And if you heard our previous two episodes, actually three episodes, regarding the fact that the Jews created World War I and they created the Versailles Treaty, which led to history's most terrifying peace. And that was the subject of last week's show. And we're going to pick up from where we left off, because the sexual depravity of the Weimar Republic is absolutely astounding, especially when you consider that the Jews are doing the same thing to America today through Hollywood, through television, movies, various forms of so-called entertainment, etc., etc. And so what we're going to do, we're going to pick up from this record called The Sexual Decadence of Weimar Germany. And this is from www.darkmoon.me, Lasha Darkmoon. But before I start reading and picking up where we left off, David, why don't you tell us exactly where we're going to go from here?
We're going to see some real accounts. We're going to find out what was happening in Poland, number one, some real accounts from families, the Hoffman family, the Kund family, Gannat family. We can read some of these things. We can't read all the accounts of them, but we can give you, you know, where we get them from, and you can read the remainder yourself. And also we have another one called The Unknown History of the 1939 German-Polish Conflict.
Okay.
And the third article is one from the Czech point of view. It's called Did Winston Churchill Start World War II?
Okay.
And yes. It's a very interesting account. We can't read the whole thing.
Sure.
But the author is this Polish man named Stanislaw Kat Makowicz. They call him Kat.
Okay.
And he wrote a couple of books that have never been translated. I wonder why.
Yep.
They've never been translated out of Polish. So you know that they must be important, right?
Right, right. Just like Solzhenitsyn's last book, 200 Years Together. People are working on that now. I don't know if the translation is complete, but that's the book that Solzhenitsyn talks about the negative Jewish influence on Russia and the Jewish control of the Soviet Union, okay, which we here at Eurofolk Radio and in the identity movement have been telling people about for decades. But, of course, you never hear about this in mainstream history books or in college campuses. All you hear about is the 6 million that died in the Holocaust, right?
Yeah.
That's all you ever hear about.
The
holy cows cost, whatever.
The
Oh, there you go.
Holocaust.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a joke. I must say that this article, when you read this article, that before we talk about Poland and what was going on, you have to realize that when you let a Jew in your country, this is literally what hell would look like if it wasn't full of burning, you know, embers.
Yeah, right, embers,
I mean, this is the picture of what the Jews want to turn all people into.
Right,
and it says here that there were no fewer than 17 different prostitute types in this Jew-created brothel city. 8 outdoor types and 9 indoor types.
Right?
And that might be a – I mean, it's just – this is crazy. And it's,
right.
When you read this yourself, I mean, I think we should just finish this. I know you kind of touched on and you named some about the dominance. But, I mean
– the dominatrix. When you,
as you're listening to this, lady and gentlemen, as you're listening to him read this, just picture – that you can see that this is happening in America. You can see that much of this is already going on, and that this is what hell looks like. This is what the Jews want your country to look like and want the shape of your brain to be in.
Yes.
I'm serious. This is how
absolutely.
This is debauchery at the bottom level.
It sure is. It sure is. And the Jews do this to every country that they gain control of. No doubt about it. Sexual debauchery, in addition to economic debauchery, and we don't have time even to go into the hyperinflation in the Weimar Republic. That probably deserves a show all itself. But today we're going to try to
talk about a little bit.
Yeah.
But do you realize? You know, we can't really even finish this whole article. But
yeah,
Before you go to read, I wanted you to see that. I'm going to read the end part just for a second for people to understand what I'm talking about. You realize that child prostitution is now going to be legal. I think Donald Trump will take care of that. But it's officially being legalized in California. Now, when you listen to this right here, okay, it says a medicine. Now, just remember, I want you to see Pizzagate and see what this is saying.
Right.
Medicine. Okay, this is the number 8. He'll come to this in a minute, but I just want you to understand something. This is just like Pizzagate, only you went to the apothecary for it.
Right.
And remember the Three Stooges that when during Prohibition, when you wanted to get a drink, the Jews out of the apothecary, right?
Right.
So you could go there. They weren't busting them. Did you notice?
Well, yeah.
And you
alcohol
could go there
is
and
a,
you could have a drink.
It's a medicine. It's a medicine, right?
Yes. Yeah, I never realized this. So this is number 8, and they're calling this child prostitute from 12 to 16 medicine, okay?
Right.
So-called because they were prescribed as medicine in pharmacies.
Yeah.
All the client needed to do was to tell the pharmacist. Now, remember that thing about how the Jews were told to become pharmacists and apothecaries?
Right.
As well as doctors and lawyers.
Yeah,
so
way back in the 1600s.
Us. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, way back in the 1600s.
Remember that? We read that?
Right.
Okay, so they were prescribing these children as medicine in the pharmacies.
Right.
All the client needed to do was tell the pharmacist how many years he had suffered from an ailment. Example 12.
Mm-hmm.
Without mentioning what the ailment was, and the request... request the color of the pill he preferred, example, red.
Uh-huh.
He was then escorted to a cubicle where his medicine, quote,
right,
awaited a 12-year-old redhead.
Right. Yeah. Just like today.
I just wanted to highlight that one. We'll come back to that in a minute.
Yeah.
It gets even worse than this. There's even 10-year-old children you can order.
Right. Yeah. Well, it reminds me.
I just wanted to see Pizzagate there.
Right.
They're calling
cheese
it medicine,
pizza.
They're calling it pizza.
Yeah, cheese pizza is a girl, right? And they had different words for different types of. I can't call these children prostitutes. They're victims. These child victims of pedestophilia. Okay, we've dubbed it pedestophilia here at Eurofolk Radio because John Podesta is the main ringleader. And, one of the highest up in the Clinton administration, Democratic National Committee. This goes all the way up to Democratic National Committee, which is, of course, run by Jews. Okay? And there's Jews all over the place with pedestophilia, what everybody else is calling Pizzagate. But it reminds me, the Eskimos, you know, they live with snow 24/7. And so they have different words for different types of snow, where you and I, like in the northern climes of America, will say, well, it's snowing. You know, it's a light snow or a heavy snow, and that's about it.
Oh, yellow snow?
Yeah, right. But that yellow snow doesn't come from the sky. Let me
have. Don't you go right. Where the huskies go.
Yeah,
don't
right.
You eat that yellow snow.
That's right. So they have about 20 different words for different types of snow that they recognize instantly. You know, it's this type of snow, it's that type of snow, where we don't have, you know, we have heavy snow and light snow. That's about it, because we don't deal with snow that often. But they deal with 24/7, and so they have all these different words for snow. Well, this shows you how corrupt and debauched this Weimar society was, that was run by Jews. They had over 17 different words for different types of prostitutes. Okay.
May I tell you this, too? May
sure.
I let you know this in case you don't know this, Eli?
Yeah.
This is going on in Japan, the same very thing.
Wow.
They have these little school, like they have these little
school girls. Right.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And all these men go in and they know all the words, all the dance
of
stuff.
The songs of these girls.
Men.
Right.
Yeah. And they get dates with these
yes.
schoolgirls.
Right.
So this
right.
this is unbelievable. I'd seen something on it, so I just wanted to mention that it's not only in America, you know, it just so happens. Lots of Jews seem to be over there in that area, by the way.
Right. But this is something that's global, folks, and we've been reporting on it at Your Folk Radio. This global child pornography, child pedophilia, and sex trafficking. This is a global business, and we know that it's mainly Jews running it. Of course, there's always competition and things like this, but the Jews run it. And especially the state of Israel is one of the main traffickers. Okay.
Well, the Jews would say, it's the Russians that do it.
Yeah, right. It's Russian Jews. Okay. Okay, so let's pick it up here from Lasha Darkmoon's article, The Sexual Decadence of Weimar Germany. And I'm going to be scrolling down to Stefan Zweig, who has much to say about homosexuality. And we won't dwell on this too long, but you need to know the depravity that was created in the Weimar Republic by these omnivorous predatory Jews. Bars, amusement parks, honky-tonks sprang up like mushrooms along the entire Kurfürstendamm. Powdered and rough men sauntered, and they were not all professionals. Every high school boy wanted to earn some money, and in the dimly lit bars one might see government officials and men of the world of finance tenderly courting drunken sailors without any shame. Even the Rome of Suetonius had never known such orgies as the pervert balls of Berlin, where hundreds of men costumed as women and hundreds of women as men danced under the benevolent eyes of the police. In the collapse of all values, a kind of madness gained hold. Young girls.
It sounds like a Democratic convention.
There you go. I was thinking the same thing.
I'm sorry, I had to interrupt.
Right? Democratic National Committee. Young girls bragged proudly of their perversion. To be 16 and still under suspicion of virginity would have been a disgrace. Now, I just want to comment really quickly that none of this would have been possible without the fact that the Jews had utterly collapsed the German economy with their hyperinflation. Okay? People were starving.
They were eating out of garbage cans, so it was either you do participate in the debauchery or die.
Yes, yes. And then just briefly here, it's a very interesting drawing here, the City of Dreadful Joy, Weimar, Berlin, 1928. So this was going on for at least 10 years now, okay? Leading up to the global depression caused by the collapse in 1929. So the Jews were depraving German society for this length of time, and they had this depression going on until Hitler cleaned it up. Right? So everybody hates Hitler because he supposedly was trying to take over the world. No, he wasn't. He was trying to clean Germany up from the Jews that had caused all this depravity. Okay. And here, number three, conclusion. Weimar Germany as a dress rehearsal for the subsequent sexual revolution of the 1960s. And I agree with this totally. My own impression, though I could well be mistaken here, is that Weimar Germany can be seen as a trial run or dress or maybe undress rehearsal for the sexual revolution of the 1960s. A revolution.
Absolutely.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. Right on the mark. A revolution in attitudes and behavior that was to convulse America and then spread like a moral virus to Europe and the rest of the world. Again, folks, this is all the Jews doing. Recollect that it was in Germany during the Weimar period, 1923 to be exact, that the Institute für Sozialforschung was set up at the University of Frankfurt, financed by the Argentinian Jew Felix Weil. This was later to become the famous Frankfurt School. Wow.
Hot dog, get it? Penis?
Yeah, right? Exactly. Well, just one more paragraph here. It is my own hypothesis that the Germans were to be the initial guinea pigs of these cultural Marxists, all of them initially Jewish apart from Habermas. These were revolutionaries intent on complete social control by the imposition of their Marxist worldview on the rest of society. It is evident that there is no other way to get control of a society with strong moral values than to weaken those values. The formula is simple. Destroy the belief system on which that society is founded, especially its religion, and its traditional codes of honor and decency. What I've been saying about America and the U.S. Constitution and the Christian foundations of America. The Jews have been doing the same thing to America in the 20th century, the latter half of the 20th century, since World War II. But since America is such a bigger country, and because our moral values are entrenched and our Constitution is entrenched, of course, the Weimar Republic didn't have a Constitution. It was an ad hoc country set up right after the Versailles Treaty. So the German people were defenseless against the machinations of the international Jews and the local Jews. We here, fortunately, have a Constitution and long-held traditions of Christianity, which have been very difficult for the Jews to overcome. Over to you.
Yeah, well, the only problem, the thing that makes me amazed is it's so much easier to do with television and Hollywood and magazines to poison the people's minds.
Right.
Now, they didn't have that in the Weimar Republic, but still, look at the level it hit.
All right, yeah.
I don't think we've hit this bad of a level yet, although I think every one of those things that you've seen exists in this country, but not like everybody in the public is doing it, because we're not starving to death yet.
Right.
You know what I mean? If they could get the control on us. But you can see that certainly that they didn't need the television. They could still do it.
That's right.
Which is kind of scary in a way.
It is scary. But the fact is that traditional Christianity in America has had high moral standards, and those standards have been chipped away. First of all, they had to buy off an entire cadre of ministers and preachers, right? It took a long time for that to happen. It wasn't until the 60s with the televangelists where the message changed from, "We're all going to hell, you sinners," to "Do it. Do as you please and contribute to the Jews." Right? Right? There's no sin. The law has been done away with. It took them a good 70 years to do away. Let's say 1913 was the starting point. It took them a good 60 years from 1913 to 1963, when they murdered Kennedy, to set up their televangelist network. So they really didn't make much progress in that time, although they did make economic progress, and they created all these government bureaucracies under FDR, which are all unconstitutional. So you see, in America, they've had to operate much more slowly than they were able to during the Weimar Republic, which was up for grabs right after the Versailles Treaty. Okay.
There is a publication that you may wish to, in the end notes of this article, I would think it would be important, ladies and gentlemen, that you might want to get this, and I hope I think of it myself. It's one of them is called Dr. Friedrich Karl Wie, Germany and the Jewish Question, published in 1938 in Berlin by the Institute for Studies of the Jewish Question. This 8-part booklet runs to approximately 23,500 words in the English translation. And I have quoted this important work extensively both here and in my forthcoming four-part essay. So he's going to do more on this, whoever wrote this article.
All right,
how the
good.
Jews rose to world power. I felt it would be advisable to paraphrase and translate the defective Germanic English of the English version completely, quoting the original translation only when the English was free from grammatical and orthographical errors. So in other words, you might take this article and go get yourself some research material. I would remember that, Eli. We should certainly try to find this 8-part booklet and then see if he wrote this other one called World Power, How the Jews Rose to World Power.
Yes.
So Google that, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, Dr. Carl.
That's where he got this information from. So if he put this information here, you can imagine what really is in these books.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and we'll post this article up on Eurofolk Radio along with, since we pretty much dealt with this subject last Saturday, I'll put this our audio from last Saturday along with this article. People need to know what happens to a country when the Jews take power. This is what has happened to every single country on earth once the Jews have taken power. They have totally destroyed its moral character and used the people as animals, as what's the word? Commerce, right? Treated the people as commerce. The Jews are the expert commercial denizens of treating people like dirt, like subjects of for sale. Okay.
Like their own cattle.
That's right. Like their own cattle.
That's the way they look at it. We're their cattle, and they can do with their cattle what they wish. You know, basically, when it comes to your cattle like that, it's like that's if they don't want to feed their cattle until they'll do whatever they want them to do, that's what they do. That's the way they look at you, ladies and gentlemen, in case you don't know that.
That's right. Oh, no, they're God's chosen people, right?
Doing this, they're selling women. Oh, yeah. While they're doing this, they're calling us in America slave owners.
Right.
I want you to realize the hypocrisy. This is the way they do everything. You see, the news right now was trying to, we've been calling their news fake news for quite a long time. That we called them that first. So then they decided, well, we'll call them fake news. But see, whoever calls the name first is the one that seems to win. It didn't work for them. So they abandoned it immediately. I'm talking about the mainstream media was going to call all of us and all the people that are telling the truth fake news.
About
it didn't
Pizzagate,
work because we called them it first.
That's right.
So what they do is, like CNN, what they do is they say that they'll call us the name first. They'll say you're
independent
conspiracy
media
theorists.
Right?
But they're promoting conspiracy theories while they're calling us conspiracy theorists.
Right, exactly.
In other words, what that does is that means it takes the heat off them. It's the same technique. Only we won because we called them fake news first. Do you see what I'm trying to tell you there?
Sure.
It's whoever calls the name first. See, they're really anti-Semitic. They're anti-white. Anti-Semitic means white. Mm-hmm. But they called us anti-Semitic first. So it's hard for us to turn that back on them and prove when it's really the truth, they're really anti-Semitic. You understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
They called it first, so we can't seem to win it back.
Right.
It's whoever calls the name first.
We will. One more quote here from one more quote from this article. It was George Lukács, who was Lukas, one of the founding fathers of the Frankfurt School. Again, this is a Jewish economic school founded under Weimar Republic principles, who had called for a quote, a culture of pessimism and a world abandoned by God. What that has to do with economics, I have no idea. And it was one of their most fanatical ideologues, Willy Münzenberg, who had said he wanted to turn the world upside down and make life a hell on earth, typical Jewish communism. There's no difference between the Frankfurt School and Bolshevism, none whatsoever. It's just more subtle. We must organize the intellectuals and use them to make Western civilization stink. Only then, after they have corrupted all of its values and made life impossible, can we impose the dictatorship of the proletariat. Unquote. All right.
Yeah.
Jews everywhere. They're both communists and Zionists. Don't ever let anybody tell you there's a difference between a communist and a Zionist. They're working together. They're both international Jews working different ends of the fence against the middle. Okay. One group starts a fire in the university. The other group starts a fire in the street. And eventually those two fires meet in the middle. And that's what they mean by destroying civilization. They have to destroy our civilization in order to build their corrupt civilization of global dictatorship. This is what's in store for you, ladies and gentlemen, if you continue to allow the Jews to dictate terms to us. Over to you.
Well, I think people are starting to come out of it so badly that the Jews are really freaking out now.
Yes.
I mean, I think that the all of a sudden, once you start to connect, I talked to somebody today and they didn't freak out on me. I never mentioned the word, but I told them that there were a certain people that were did ritual murder sacrifice of children. And I talked about abortion. And right. Then I said, these same kind of people, six of them own 96% of the media. And I told them that they were kicked out of the countries of Europe 109 times because of child ritual murder sacrifice, you know,
yeah.
Which is abortion legalized.
Sure.
So basically, you know, just a few of those things. And I told them about Eustace Mullen's book. And I said, there's only one people on this earth that would turn the medical, you know, helping people get well when they're sick into a business. I never mentioned the word, though.
Right.
And they didn't get upset, and it was amazing. And I think they know who I was talking about.
We
didn't say the word, but because I didn't want to. This was supposed to be – I was speaking with somebody I'm doing business with, and you're really not supposed to be talking about politics.
Right.
But there was somebody that you could tell kind of was almost awake.
Right.
They told me they were a former liberal as well.
Right. Oh, that's good. Former liberal. That's good to hear.
Yes, and yes. that they had come out of it.
Yes, that's excellent. That's excellent. We pray for more and more people to come out of their libtard state of insomnia, right? Delusion, total political and spiritual delusion that's otherwise known as progressivism, right?
Did you hear my news show this week?
Yeah.
Did you hear that girl that wants to be the lead of the Democratic National Party? Her name is Boynton Brown, Sally Boynton Brown or something.
Okay.
Did you hear the speech?
No, I didn't hear the speech. I listened to part of it, the replay today. So,
you missed the first show. I made it the first show. Check out last week's news, ladies and gentlemen. You've got to hear it for yourself. And this is supposed to be a leader now.
Okay.
And she was saying that it's her job to shut white people up.
Wow.
and she said she doesn't have the answers about the racial problems, but she's looking to the black, you know, to the dark people, the colored people, for the answers on how we get back to health between the race, you know,
right.
in the sense
as if
of
there
like,
ever was,
you know, because
any.
The white people are so far out of whack right now, and that Ohio's too white.
Uh-huh. Right?
You had to hear this just to believe. You got to hear this just to believe it.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you.
How brainwashed people are. Well, that's because the Jews control the educational system. That is all anti-white, especially anti-white male. You know, it's the so-called white patriarchy. No mention whatsoever of the fact that the porn industry is run by Jews and the culture of rape was created by Jews, not by white men. Okay. But that's how brainwashed these people are. They simply believe what they're told by their college professors. They don't know any better. And then they hit the streets and everybody thinks they're stupid, which they are. Right? Really, really stupid. But that's what happens if you send your kids to college today, folks. Keep your kids out of the colleges and universities. They're simply part of the road to the Jewish hell that's being created in the world today. That's all it is.
I told somebody what you said about that. Mm-hmm. You said when you went to Vietnam. When you came back, you were fighting communism in Vietnam, and when you came back, you went to college, and you had all these communist Marxist
professors
and teachers in your college, and you were shaking your head, going, "What the hell's going on here?"
Yeah.
Well, this is the problem with the whole thing. With the whole thing is, I tried to tell this guy. This guy thing. He says to me this week. He says, "Well, what's wrong with all the races being equal?" I says, "Because it's a fable. It's a fable of the Jews." In other words, it's a nice ideal. Right. It's a nice idea. It sounds nice, but it doesn't translate.
Yeah.
I said to him, "Well, let me. Do you know how it is in India, where the people are crapping all over the place?
Yeah,
drinking water.
That's racial equality.
I'm equal to them. I want you to know that.
Yeah, right.
You know, so I'm not trying to get off on a tangent, but here's why people have to think about, and this is what one of the ways we can get them to think about it, because I think this guy's now thinking about it. He's an intelligent guy. There's nothing wrong with his brain in that way. But I says to him, "Let me ask you a question." I said, "Where did you get your frame of reference from?" He says, "Well, from the school and from the media and from Hollywood." I mentioned some of them to help him along, you know what
sure.
I mean? And he
said,
"Yeah." I says, "Well, there's 2% of the people that own all that stuff. And it's been slanted in the Marxist direction. So the reason why you have the frame of reference that you have in this life is because that's where you got it from." See, what you have to make them realize is they didn't get this from themselves. They didn't get this because they searched for what the truth is. They're only getting a slanted view of what the world is. Mm-hmm. If you're just getting it from the Marxist
Jewish view,
people,
right.
From the Jew, you're only getting one side of the story. And when you hear the other side of the story, you're going to change
gonna
your out. Opinion very
you're
quickly.
You're going to freak out. Right?
Yeah, I told him there's two educations you get. And you obviously already have the other education, but you're responsible to educate yourself. I told him that the founding fathers are about 50 times smarter than we ever have been. Mm-hmm. And I said, nobody in a college, nobody in Harvard, in college today could pass the Harvard exam 100 years ago.
Right.
I don't mean white people. I'm talking about
anybody. Yeah.
Virtually hardly anybody would be able to pass that today.
Right. Yeah. They were smart. And most of them were self-educated. And they went to college just to get a degree to prove how smart they were, right? And those were Christian colleges.
Right, but they actually earned the degree, unlike Martin Luther King or somebody like that.
Oh, yeah, no, the plagiarist. Yeah, right, right. Okay, so where do you want to go to next? Did Winston...
I think it would be nice if I read one of the family story and you read the family, the one that's called World War II, The Real Reason.
Okay.
Because this is what was going on. Like, if you want to, talk about why Hitler was upset with, you see, after the division, there were German people living in Polish territories.
Right.
After the First World War that had been, they just gave land away. Just gave Germany's land away. They didn't
That's
lose
right.
the war, but they split up Germany.
Yeah.
And they gave certain territories to Poland, etc.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to talk about that.
Well,
but here's the result of what was going on. So, you know, they're asking Hitler to ignore all this. You know, Germany's rising at this point now. They're not eating in the garbage anymore. They're on the top. They're on a new high. Everybody, the nation is in step with each other. The nation the fruits of the nation are multiplying at a super duper rate. And everybody is happy and proud again. The youth is healthy.
Mm-hmm.
There's no more of these, what we just talked about, the filth and stuff that went on. All those books were burned. All those Marxist books were burned. All the bad things that the Jews had done through the press. All that stuff was burned. While the Jews told you they were burning important literature and
right
because they wanted to brainwash the German public.
Right.
So it's totally
sure.
the opposite of what that. Anything
yes.
the Jews say, just take it as the opposite. Just like when Obama was president. Okay. Yes. So here it is. If you want me to read the first one.
Well, let me read the title here. It's because there's a misprint on the blue heading. World War II, The Real Reason, and a photograph of an old lady and her great-grandson, the only survivors of her entire family massacred in Poland. Massacre of the Volksdeutschers, it should be. It says Deuterers. It should be Volksdeutschers. Ethnic Germans, by Polish military and civilians. Now, I hope they go into the Jewish connection, because it was Jews and Freemasons who instigated the Poles against the Germans in this period of time. Back over to you.
Well, we can certainly talk about that, but here, what this is, ladies and gentlemen, it's called World War II, The Real Reason, as he told you, and what it is real families' first accounts. So it says right here, you will now read first-person accounts of that time, and they all justify the incursion into Poland. In fact, they demanded intervention. Mm-hmm. Eugen Hoffman, that's the name. Mm-hmm. On September 2nd, 1939, this Bromberg merchant was arrested on orders of the commander of the air raid district, Isidor Berger, a Polish Jew, and was taken to the women's prison in Bromberg. On September 4th, he and all the Germans held in this prison were given a certificate of release and were indeed released. However, this release certificate also ordered any police officer to kill the bearer. All but Hoffman were murdered the same day. He escaped to tell his story, hiding with relatives. You want to do Robert Kund?
Okay. Hold on one second. Where are you at?
If you want me to.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
You see Robert Kund? It's the second story. Monday, 4th September.
Eugen Hoffman. Okay. Robert Kunde. Monday, 4th September 1939. Four Polish soldiers entered the home of Kunda at the Wierbachstrasse 23 in Bromberg. And again, remember, folks, all of these towns and villages we're talking about were formerly part of Germany, territory taken away from Germany by the Versailles Treaty, by the Jews who ran the Versailles Treaty, and searched for weapons. Finding none, they wrote comments on the passports of Kunda and his son, Wilhelm, that stated the bearer was suspect, and on other pages made the note that the bearer should be shot, even though they found no weapons. These soldiers arrested the male members of the Kunda family and handed them over, along with other Germans, to Polish soldiers who took them into the nearby woods. Sounds like a Katyn forest.
Kunda, exactly.
Yeah, right. Kunda and another German, a man named Grüning, managed to escape. All the others were shot dead. Kunda later learned that his father had also been murdered. So, folks, let me just tell you real quick. This is a part of history that has been totally blacked out. It won't be in any of your Orthodox history books. You have to do your own research, and you have to consult right-wing, patriotic sources, nationalistic sources, to find this information. It won't be in your average Jew press. Back over to you.
Okay, what I will say is, as you're hearing these stories, this is how the Jews would use something like this, and they would say that the Germans committed what happened at the Katyn Forest.
Right.
But as a revenge, you would think it would be a good revenge, right? It would make sense. In other words, you took us out to the woods, we'll take you out to the woods, right?
Right.
But you see what happened, and the Germans were blamed for that. But later we found out, see, you can tell it wasn't the Germans, because the Jews did the same thing in the Bolshevik Republic.
Right.
I mean, you know, they went over there and they took all the intellects, all the scientists, all the top military men, all the brilliant minds of Russia, and shot them dead.
Right.
So you can see that that's the modus operandi of the Jew. So it's the same thing that happened. What happened in the Katyn Forest was they took out the same caliber of people in Poland, because then the Jews could just take over their positions, you understand?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So they took them all out and they killed them and they threw them in and they blamed the Germans for it. Because there was, you know, there's always been something going on between the Germans and the Poles, even before Poland was a country, as you said last week.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it was easy for them to blame the Germans. So there's another reason to hate the Germans, another atrocity. I mean, imagine those evil Germans. See, while they were doing that to the Tsar and his family and all the people, the high mucky-mucks in Russia, they're blaming the – and they did it over here in Poland, and they blamed the Germans. It was just kind of nice and, you know, easy to do. It was just kind of convenient.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. next story. Vera Gannot. The home where she and her parents live was invaded by Polish authorities on Sunday, September 3rd. Here is the translation of her sworn statement taken on 14th September 1939. I am 19, Protestant, without occupation. When it came known in the town that the German troops were coming in, the civilian population and Polish soldiers began to commit acts of violence. At about 2 o'clock on Sunday, Polish soldiers and civilians came toward our house at Thorner Straba 125.
That's Strasse. Two and a half. It's a double S. It's not a B.
That's a double S, not a B. It looks like a B.
No, it's a double
that's
S.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's
okay, Strasse 125.
Yes.
2.5 miles from the town. The Polish civilians said, Germans live here. The soldiers immediately began to fire. We fled into a shed. I believe the Polish soldiers also threw hand grenades. My father was the first taken from the shed. The Poles asked him where he had the machine gun. My father did not understand the question because he did not know Polish. Thereupon, I came out of the shed, for I knew Polish and wanted to help my father. I asked the Poles what he had done to them and interceded for my father. But the Poles shouted, "Down with you, German swine." My father was repeatedly struck on the face and body with rifle butts and then stabbed with a bayonet. Thereupon, my father fell to the ground, and as he lay, he was shot 6 times before dying. The mob then left after telling civilians they could loot the house, else the soldiers would burn it down. Now my mother also came out of her hiding place. She and I wanted to wash my father, who was completely covered with blood. Just as we started, there appeared another Polish mob armed with pickets and clubs. My mother and my aunt were beaten with the clubs. I was slapped again and again. Then they left. After a while, there came another mob of Polish soldiers and civilians. As they approached, I ran to the river Bra, which flows past the rear of our house. I was dragged out by the hair. Between 10 and 15 civilians dragged me into the house. They said they were going to show me that the Poles weren't bad after all. They would allow me to change my wet clothes. No one left the room, so I refused to change. The Poles thereupon tore my clothes off and laid me on the ground naked. About 10 men held me down by the head, hands, and feet while one of them raped me. He completed the act, and it sounds like a football team,
yeah.
A black football team here.
Right.
He completed the act, I suffered injuries. I had considered pain during the first days, but not anymore. The Poles did not attack me. During this time, my mother was taken from the room on the upper floor and held at the point of the rifle. Polish soldiers robbed money, a bag, watches, and rings from my father and myself. Our home was completely destroyed. The furniture hacked to pieces with axes. Our china and linens were stolen. We did not have any arms in our house. This is what happens when you're unarmed.
That's
we
right.
had previously surrendered them to the police because of a general order.
There you go. right?
Need we say yeah. any more?
Well, it's obvious that the Jews had orchestrated this all along with the intention of because they had not stopped mistreating the German people since the end of World War I. Okay? And by mistreating the German people, they knew they would incite another war. And, you know, so they created the Frankfurt School and these other communist Jewish organizations to gradually take over Germany and destroy the morale of the German people, which Hitler was able to counteract. And he was the only one. He was the only one that was able to counteract all this Jewish perfidy and subversion and debauchery against the German people. Okay. And I just want to say also that people listening to the show, many, this is the first they've ever heard of anything like this. about the Jewish Polish assault against German civilians in the Danzig corridor and other places in Germany as well.
As a matter of fact, what have they heard, Eli? They've right. heard this happening to poor Jews hiding in houses.
Yes. Right? Yeah.
Could a little suspect there. I don't think that happened to them. I think that they're trying to pretend that these stories happened to them.
Right.
Remember that the Holocaust has been proven over and over that these Holocaust survivors have been proven as liars and everything.
Yes.
But their only excuse is, it was real in my mind.
Yeah, right.
No, right? How many stories have you heard that were proven liars just recently?
Right.
And that's their only thing they can come up with. Well, it was real in my mind.
Right. Well, the history of Germany,
real.
The history of Germany has been one long horror story with a couple of breaks. The one break is when Hitler came to power, and then we had World War II and the Allied Jewish occupation of Germany, with now the current invasion of Germany by non-whites being brought in by Jews from all over the world. You know, to attack the German people. So this war against the German people has been going on since World War I, virtually nonstop, with the exception of the reign of Hitler. Okay.
All right, could we do two more of these? Would
sure.
you mind doing Sister Schmidt and the Children's Home? We'll skip that one because this one's called Bloody Sunday.
Right.
You know,
right.
we've heard about, I
Bloody
looked that
Sunday.
Up, you know, what Bloody Sunday really is. You know how... The Irish group there that's not
right.
so good of a singer there. He's
right.
a liberal
yeah.
idiot.
Right.
And he sings Sunday,
Bono.
Bloody Sunday. Well, Bono. I happen to find out that in Ireland, there have been four Bloody Sundays. I didn't
okay.
know that.
All right.
I was trying to figure out, is he singing about, you know, Jews being attacked on some Bloody Sunday or something
right.
like that? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it was in Ireland. There's four different accounts of Bloody Sundays.
Right, right. Well, this was the original one. This is the original one, and it happened in Germany, Bloody Sunday, in, technically Germany, right, but in Poland, land given to Poland. As we said earlier last week, Poland was created by the Versailles Treaty with land taken from Germany, okay? Sister Schmidt and the Children's Home, Bloody Sunday. The Deutsches Kinderheim, that is German Children's Home, on Dornerstrasse in Bramberg was searched five times in all on Bloody Sunday. About 7 a.m., two Polish soldiers demanded admittance. They searched the house for arms and left after having convinced themselves that their mission was futile. Soldiers were polite. The second search by six Polish soldiers occurred at about 9:30 a.m. They beat against the door with their rifle butts and demanded admittance. One of them put his pistol to the temple of Sister Olga, head of the Kinderheim, insisting that a machine gun was hidden in the house and that shots from it had just been fired. They demanded surrender of arms. Well, you'd be able to smell something like that, wouldn't you? Okay, if shots had been fired? Because the smell of gunpowder, freshly fired gunpowder, is unmistakable. Sister Olga replied that there were no weapons and bade them search. The soldiers searched the house thoroughly, breaking into drawers and cupboards that could not easily be opened. Finding no weapons, the searchers left. By the way, I need to add here that the Polish people have been victims of the Jews for centuries, ever since the 1200s, when the Polish monarch who made a deal with the Jews to allow them to be booze peddlers and tax collectors, et cetera, and work for the government against the Polish people. So there was a conspiracy by the Polish monarch and the Jews to oppress the Polish people. And this is in large part why the Poles are such imbibers of vodka and other alcoholic drinks. It was the Jews who started that tradition by selling booze to the Polish people, which, of course, the Jews have no respect for any of our people, whatever nationality. Anyway,
just like Russia, right?
Just like Russia.
Before you go on,
yeah.
But as you're going on with this, right? does this not sound like the Gestapo?
Right?
You know what I'm trying to say to you? You
sure.
See, this is the kind of bull
crap KGB.
where the Jews take something that happened to the Germans and use it and pretend that the Germans did these kind of evil things.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying that the Gestapo didn't do any kind of investigations, but they're a much more moral army than any army that's ever been on the earth. Because I'll tell you something right now, Eli, and I don't mean to, you know, cut you off here, but we know by the movie Hellstorm and by other losses and things like that, we know that the Geneva Convention was obeyed by the Germans.
That's right.
But it was not obeyed by the Allies.
That's correct.
I want you to remember that.
Now
let's think about today. Germany and England are not obeying anything in the things of war either. They're torturing.
Right.
So they haven't repented of it. I'm talking about America, too.
Sure.
We haven't repented of it. We're still not obeying the how you treat war prisoners.
Yes.
The Germans obeyed it to the T.
That's right.
And I can hear people jumping. I can hear Jews doing backflips right now, right?
No,
but
what I'm telling you is
they're the
British
Germans
prisoners
were
of
the
war.
Most moral army probably ever.
Probably ever, yes. No, British and American prisoners of war all reported when they were prisoners of Nazi Germany, they were well treated. All of them.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, but the opposite, they didn't obey the Geneva Convention.
That's
right. In other words, the law is only for somebody else. It's just the same way it is today in America and in England. The law is for somebody, whoever we want to tell to obey it. It's not for us to obey. It's for whomever we. So, in other words, they made an agreement and they broke the agreement, but the Germans remain honorable.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to make that point.
That's right.
Anyway, that's not a bad tangent to go on. So if you would continue,
I'm
just going to take a second to go to the bathroom, if you don't mind.
I'll continue. In the late afternoon or forenoon, as the children were about to lunch, a third search was undertaken by four or five Polish soldiers accompanied by as many civilians. So let's say 8 to 10. Some of these soldiers had taken part in the previous search. The soldiers again insisted that shots had been fired from the house and demanded to see a machine gun. Here again, I have to add, if shots had been fired in the house, the smell of gunpowder would be reeking throughout the entire house. But apparently there's no smell of gunpowder. No one suggests anything of such a smell. One of them threatened the sister with his bayonet. The sister repeated that she had no weapons. One of the soldiers, the sister believed that he was an officer, thereupon said, "But we have been told that shots were just fired from here." Okay, well, it's a rumor. Just because you're told something doesn't mean it's true. The soldiers who had taken part in the previous search confirmed that there was really nothing upstairs. However, a Pole named Maximilian Gakowski, the only civilian who had followed the soldiers to the staircase, kept shouting, "Shots have been fired from here. I saw it myself." Turning to Sister Schmidt, he yelled, "You old hag! You old shrew! You and your brats should have been driven away long ago. If I could have done what I wanted, you would have been dead long ago. I would have killed you all myself." Okay, this shows how the international Jew has incited hatred between and among white nations for as long as the Jew has existed. Okay? So this just shows how the Polish people have been brainwashed against Germany by the Jews that ruled Germany. I mean, by the Jew that ruled Poland while Germany was undergoing the Weimar Republic depredations. Okay? So it wasn't as bad in Poland because Poland was not a threat to the Jews. They already controlled it. Totally. Okay? And so they needed to take control of Germany away from the German people. That's why the Weimar Republic was instituted. Anyway, he brandished a weapon, believed to have been a steel rod, in the sister's face. However, Gakowski could not convince the soldiers that the search ended. So again and again, this is like the third time this day that a search has occurred. The next search by about five soldiers and five civilians took place around 3 p.m. Gakowski was again present. The leader of the group ordered all inmates, including three sisters and 18 children ranging from 2 to 18 years, to gather and raise their hands. Gakowski ranted as before, insisting time and again that shots had been fired from the house, and asked for the machine gun. He brought a witness who he claimed was ready to swear that shots had been fired. While the soldiers searched the house, one of them remained standing before Sister Olga with his bayonet. Gukowski took part in the search of the house. After this group had found nothing, Gukowski declared, "They work in the daytime, but evenings they have men upstairs, they smoke cigarettes, I've seen it myself, and nights they shoot." Of course, these are all lies. These are all lies. Okay, so the next day, the raiders left, but the Kinderheim, just as a man accused of having fired shots was being brought from the direction of the Schützenhaus, care house would be some sort of makeshift hospital, maybe. Gukowski was the first to turn against this man. After the fourth search, the sisters discovered that smaller valuables among the sisters' Olga watch were missing. Okay, so they searched and stole. The last search was made about 5:30 p.m. It was again made by soldiers and civilians. The head of the group approached Sister Olga with his rifle and threatened to shoot her. At this moment, one of the sisters who had been ordered to help in the cleaning up of the railroad station returned amid a mob of soldiers and civilians. The sister, having been compelled to clean the railroad tracks, was very dirty. At the instigation of Gukowski, who was again present, a railway man charged that the lubrication oil on the hands and the dress of the sister was from a machine gun. Oh, man. As before, Gukowski sought to incite the soldiers by declaring that shots had been fired. However, it was proved that there were no arms in the Kinderheim and that no shots were fired from the house. So this goes to show you how a mob of people can be organized, you know, against, you know, this would have to be called, it's not racial hatred, but ethnic hatred of Germans, Poles against Germans, incited by communist Jews.
And what we could see there from a story like this, and you know I won't watch anything from Hollywood when it comes to this, but you know how they put their Holocaust movies out? Well, they would take a story like this right here, and Gukowski would be the Nazi leader,
he'd be
evil blonde German man who was just completely doing. And of course, the Germans had no kind of morals, so they'd steal the objects off the people as well. So he'd make a Holocaust movie out of this, and they'd take this story and twist it. Yeah. That Gukowski was from the, you know, the Germans.
Role reversal.
This is how the Germans treated either the Poles or the Jews.
Well, this is how the Jews.
One and the same.
This is how the Jews rewrite history. It's role reversal. They do it constantly. Right? They're always accusing everybody else what they're guilty of.
People just believe it.
Yeah, they never question it. Why? Because it's on television. Because it's in the movies. Because it's on the radio. That's why they don't question it. Or you're a college professor.
So this is the problem. This is a real problem. That because, you know, when you're talking about the Geneva Convention, it's the same thing as we see the same modus operandi in the Civil War. We see that the soldiers and the people that they had taken prisoner were absolutely treated like the lowest piece of garbage on the planet.
Right.
There are rules when you have warfare, okay? There are certain rules you give as just a moral, fundamental morals of war that you just don't do to people. Like, you really shouldn't be raping women.
Right? Sure.
You shouldn't gouge somebody's eyes out and all these kinds of crazy things. There's certain if you have prisoners of war, they should have latrines, they should have shelter. They should have, food. They should be treated, But see, the Germans, we will go into this. We will show you the morals of the Allies. And those morals, what I was saying before, those morals of the Allies, they participated and signed, I believe, the Geneva Convention, which proclaimed how you have to treat war prisoners. But only Germany abided by it.
That's right. That's right. And the figures are this, folks. At least 58,000 ethnic Germans were murdered in raids just like the ones we're describing. 58,000 Germans, ethnic Germans, who were actually living in what used to be Germany, but a part of Germany now given to the Polish country, which did not exist before the Versailles Treaty. So all of this ethnic violence was directly caused by the Versailles Treaty. Directly caused by it.
What are Yeah, what do we notice by this? What was happening? Why did Hitler respond to this? Well, in the same way as Israelites cry out to Yahweh from Egypt, we were crying out until he delivered us. Well, these Germans were crying out, and Hitler was hearing their cries.
Mm-hmm.
And he could not ignore the cry.
Yes. Yeah.
You see,
absolutely.
He was hearing about the atrocities. They had intelligence in Poland. They knew what was going on. As a matter of fact, the last story we'll read from this shows you that Germans were around the areas. So what's happening here is Hitler is hearing these cries, and, you know, obviously somebody was prodding the Poles to do these things to aggravate the Germans so they would hear the cries,
right,
so they could entice Hitler to do something. In other words, it was the poking of the stick.
The provocation.
Hitler kept
yes.
on saying, no, we're not going to do anything. No, we're not going to do anything. And they kept prodding him with the stick and prodding him with the stick until they made him do something.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. By the way, there's a really good article on this by Dr. Lorraine Day. I'll send you a link to that. But if you want to go ahead and continue reading another...
Yeah, I'd just like to read at least this last story, because these okay. are, you know, even though we're reading stories, you're getting to see, I mean, when I hear these stories, I'm just picturing these German Holocaust movies, I mean, these Jewish Holocaust movies.
Right? Yes.
Only something's wrong. The victim is the German.
Right.
William yep. Stark testifies about the horticulturist Herr Berndt. Berndt. Okay, an SS cap was reputedly
yes.
found at the establishment of horticulturist Berndt of Lissa. Berndt was thereupon arrested. Neither he nor his brothers have ever had the SS cap in their house. It was later discovered that the cap had been found by the Polish attackers of a village in Geiersdorf. There were 10 SS men in the village who had to leave without their outfits. You see, that this is, mm-hmm. they were probably intelligence people.
Could be.
So it was, or maybe, I don't know why yeah. they would have their, if they were yeah. intelligence, they probably shouldn't have had to have their SS uniforms, though. That's what's
right.
weird. Okay. It was ascertained that the cap belonged to an SS man, Ernst Weidermann of Vienna. Okay. So
okay.
the attack on the Mathis family. Late in the morning of 3rd September 1939, the accused, Kazimir Dybowski, Paul Kaczynski, and Pijarowski, accompanied by a considerable number of unidentified Polish civilians and by several Polish soldiers with fixed bayonets, marched along Arberstrasse in Bromberg.
See, the city even has all its German names still. The street names are all German.
That's Albertstrasse, I should
yeah,
have said.
Yeah, Albertstrasse, right. Bromberg,
okay,
that's
so
a German
Dybowski
name.
Dybowski had a knife in his hand. Kinzuski, that's funny, Kinzuski, and Pierjowski had an axe and a hatchet. When the mob arrived from in front of Albertstrasse 24, where witness Herbert Mathis, a member of the German minority, Volksdeutsche, which means people, yeah. German people, carried on a large cabinet making trade. They were so they're cabinet makers. Okay,
yeah.
That's all they are. So they were incited by Kinzuski to raid the house. Speaking to witness Biermann, who was responsible for the air raid protection of the house, Kinzuski insisted that Mathis had fired on Polish officers. Biermann's repeated denials of the charge were to no avail, and the mob broke through the courtyard to the drying room, in which Mathis, his wife and two sons, and his 72-year-old mother had hidden. The door of the room was locked, and when it was not opened at the ringleader's demand, Kinzuski simply smashed it with his axe, smashed it in. Thereupon, Miss Ella Mathis, her two sons, and her mother-in-law appeared in the doorway. Herbert Mathis remained. See, this is like, you know,
yeah.
Anne Frank hiding out, the
right.
Jew hiding out.
Yeah.
The German soldiers are banging on the doors, and
yeah.
they've just broken through the door here, you see? Only these
right.
are Germans.
Well, this is like
so
a horror
Herbert,
movie. Only the Germans are the victims, right?
Yeah, yes. You see, that's the point, though. It's like this, you know, Anne Frank's hiding out in a house.
Right.
Right? You know, in some secret hiding place.
Yeah.
Well, that's where they were hiding, in a secret hiding place.
Right.
So this guy busts down the door with an axe, okay?
Yeah.
Herbert Mathis remained in hiding at first. Mrs. Mathis told the members of the mob and the soldiers that her husband was not home and that she did not know where he had gone. Kingszewski replied that in the case the two sons would be taken as hostages. However, Mathis stepped forward to save his children.
Mm.
He wasn't a black man, I can tell.
Yeah, right.
Okay, Kingszewski swung his axe at Mathis, but Bierman caught the handle and deflected the blow. Simultaneously, Pijarowski with his axe and Dybowski with his knife headed towards 72-year-old Selma Mathis, but failed to harm her. Finally, Mathis and his two sons were led away by Polish soldiers. Mathis later succeeded in himself and his children by escaping while their Polish captors were quarreling over the division of the valuables taken from Mathis, thus relaxing their vigil.
Okay.
You know, so there's even stories where they had found people later that had been beaten in the village and their eyes were poked out with bayonets.
Right.
And just bloodied all over the place. I mean, there's more stories here, folks, if you want to read them. And it's disgusting. That's all we have to tell you. We couldn't read every one of these because it would take several shows. I mean, it just goes on and on. There's about, you know, at least 10 more stories at least.
Yeah, so people have the false impression that Europe was a peaceful place after the Versailles Treaty. Nothing could be further from the truth, folks. It was a hotbed of ethnic strife. It triggered by the Versailles Treaty, triggered by the Jews who imposed the terms on Europe of Versailles. This was all
prepared. May I remind you about something?
Yes. Go ahead.
I don't mean to interrupt. I'm sorry. But you just said it was peaceful after the Versailles Treaty, right? But there really wasn't, right?
No,
you said
that's
it really wasn't, right?
Yes.
Because it's a lie of peace that the Jews have always been lying about peace. In the same way as the UN is a lie about that the world would be
that's
peaceful
right.
if we would all just join the UN. Well,
yes.
I just wanted to remind you folks that when you read the Versailles Treaty, within the treaty, right in the first part of it, are the articles establishing the what did he call it before? The League of Nations.
Right. Yeah. The League to Enforce
Peace.
Okay, that
was slipped in there now. You need, what does that have to do with the Versailles Treaty, really?
It
means that the Jews, you know, what they had just done is they had taken revenge on the Tsar. Remember, I'm just recapping.
Yeah.
1815, they wanted to establish this League of Nations, the Rothschilds, and the Tsar in Russia at that time told him, no way, Jose. He knew what it was. He stopped it right there. So at that point, I remind you that Rothschild said, I will get you and your family.
Mm-hmm.
So here it is, like 102 years later. And while the war is going on in 1917, they do the Bolshevik Revolution.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So they got the revenge on the Tsar so that he wouldn't torpedo anything, right?
Yes.
And they stole his money and everything. But during this time, while nobody's looking, now, right there, they got rid of the Tsar. The next thing they do is make this treaty in 1919. Remember, it was November 11th, 1919, I believe. And November is 11/11/1919. Remember I was talking about that?
Right.
So they slipped in the precursor to the League of Nations and got all the nations to agree on these things against Germany.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Total Jewish conspiracy against Germany, right? Making Germany the new sick man, right? But Adolf Hitler put a stop to that. Okay, and you could suspect that the Jews would think, well, they're, you know, a populist leader would eventually rise in Germany, but I think Hitler outsmarted them in ways. Well, in the same way that Abraham Lincoln outsmarted the Jews during the Civil War by printing government money, right? Okay. Hitler did the same thing. And it was through this government money that Hitler issued that he righted the ship of the German state. And this was in the midst of a global world depression, folks. America was still going through the depression, and we never came out of it until after the war. Whereas Hitler solved the German depression by simply taking the control of the economy away from the Jews. So the Jews could never forgive Hitler for that. Nazi Germany had to be destroyed because the rest of the world would catch on. What happens? You can run your country without Jewish money. People can't be allowed to believe that, right?
Okay. Yeah, you can go from the bottom economy to the top economy once you get the Jew out of your nation in about 4 years.
Yes, exactly. Complete turnaround, and Nazi Germany was the only nation in the world that had this complete turnaround during this global depression. Everybody else stayed in the depression.
Okay. So what's happening in America during this time? I just want to recap that. Early 1900s, about 1907, they began bank runs. They orchestrated these bank runs. They begin to have banking problems. In other words, it's problem, reaction, solution.
Right.
They're trying to get the people to cry out for the central bank, which the people really didn't cry out for. It didn't work. They had since the problem, reaction, solution thing didn't work, they caused these bank runs in 1907, and yes, it was a problem. So the solution to that problem was the central bank, but the people really weren't going for it. You see what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So they had to steal it. So as we know, in 1913, they put in three things, repeating again, but they put in the power to destroy, which is the IRS Act, putting a direct tax. But see, in reality, this direct tax was not on all the people. It was on the military people that worked for the military, anybody that works in the military or on the military base. It was also put on Washington, D.C. employees, and it was also put on people in Puerto Rico, the Cayman Islands, and Guam. Mm-hmm. That's where the IRS truly has any jurisdiction at all. They don't have any jurisdiction in the states whatsoever. So how they got the direct tax later on the people is I'm just going to go back to 45 for a minute. During the war, FDR tricked the people into doing a federal tax return to pay for the war.
It's called withholding.
As if America didn't have enough money.
Right. It was called withholding.
But guess what happened
after? They withheld pay.
Yeah. Did you
from
remember?
American workers. Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's called withholding. The businesses had to withhold your pay and give it to the government. So you were taxed before you even earned the money.
Which is illegal. Now,
of course.
I want you to know that. But number one, what nobody knows is it was promised that this is only until the end of the war.
Right. And that promise
so
was not
kept.
So it
was to end at the end of the war. But somehow, some way, I would imagine the Juden press must have done it.
Right.
That the what happened was everybody forgot to stop filing.
Right. Don't stop now. Just keep filing, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I would love to know how they did it. Someday we can try to do an investigation on that because that's the truth. It was supposed to stop.
Right.
But I want you to understand the tactic of the Jew. We saw them put in the Treaty of Versailles. We saw them put in the League of Nations in the Treaty of Versailles, but it didn't come into fruition really until 1945.
Mm-hmm.
We saw them put the Federal Reserve Act in and the IRS Act and the ADL to destroy destroy white people and destroy the culture and destroy Christianity and all the things the ADL does.
Mm-hmm.
But what we saw is that the IRS Act didn't go into full gear until that war.
Until after the war, yeah.
I mean, it might have been happening in Washington, D.C. and on the bases like it was supposed to initially, okay? But then all of a sudden it went into federally, and then all of a sudden people are garnishing your wages. This is one of the reasons why corporations don't pay any taxes, in my opinion, is because they are illegally playing a game with you. They're telling you when you join a corporation that you have to fill out a W-2 form so that they can steal your money up ahead from you and send it to these ABC entities illegally.
Mm-hmm.
And you're participating in this illegally, and it's illegal. So the government, because they're stealing your money, is allowing them to get away with not paying any taxes.
Right.
Okay, so basically that's how things are done. And the same thing that you can think about right now is the Noahide laws. They were put in 1990, 91? But they're not in operation yet.
Not yet.
But they will be if the Jew can.
If they can, yeah, if they can, they will. Right.
But see, that's how the tactic is. You put the law in ahead of time.
That's right. To prepare for the eventuality that you're anticipating, right? Right.
Yes. In other words, you don't want to do it too quickly. You want to move on it, you know, in a slow way, like the trick they were doing with the Senate there. They were going to say that they were going to put that law through, and the whole Senate, not every one of them's a traitor, as I said. They all voted unanimously in the Senate that they would put this thing where you can't criticize the Jews on college campuses. Mm-hmm. See, that's just a stepping stone. See, once you can put it in there, then you start to implement it somewhere else.
Right.
You know you can't do it in the corporation, right?
Yeah, yeah.
In the Jew-run corporation. So there are anti-free speech zones already existing around the country.
Yes.
See how it's done like piece by piece. It's a puzzle. So then after they say you can't do it in the pretty soon in the whole country wouldn't be able to do it. You wouldn't be able to criticize the Jew in the whole country.
That's right.
But did you know that Goebbels says that when the Jews outlaw criticism of themselves, that's the sure sign it's the beginning of their end?
Right. That's right. Okay, yeah.
All right, well, I don't mean to take you on tangents, but I want to see the patterns. When you're going to know about this enemy and you see how it operates, you have to understand what I just told you, that they don't just throw a law in and that it's going to be there. I want you to see why they hid that in the what do you call it? The Versailles Treaty.
Yeah.
Now, when they were doing the hate crime bills, I'll also mention this, that Ted Kennedy, which is a big proponent, I believe he's Jewish. I believe the Kennedys were Jewish. It was proven that they were. But,
right.
You know, not everybody wants to agree about that. Whatever. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he, in that bill of the hate crimes, he hid in that bill lessening the sentences for pedophiles.
Right.
I'm going to keep reminding that to the people of this nation.
Uh-huh.
Because, you see, that's the same technique.
Sure.
Did it reduce
why
would he reduce the sentence for pedophiles? Now, what's happening today? Now pedophiles are coming out. And
right.
So now we can reduce
their sentences
on them.
Right. Or no sentence at all. Right.
Yeah.
That's the way it works.
Pretty soon it'll be an attribute to be a pedophile. Pretty soon it'll be you're mentoring a child, teaching them how to act sexually.
That's right.
This is a good thing. It's education. See?
Right. That's Jewish education for you. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
All
okay.
right. Sorry to take you on the tangent. You can decide which one of these you would want to do.
Yeah.
We could talk about this Polish fellow saying that proved that Winston Churchill started the war, or we can talk about the unknown history of the 1939 German-Polish conflict.
Yeah.
And this is quite a nice article.
Right.
But, I mean, which do
well,
you think?
Well,
I don't
let's
know
go to the
I
latter
one
first, and maybe we can finish on the Churchill document. Okay. So this is from wintersonnenwende.com. It's in German, www.wintersonnenwende.com. And this is the unknown history of the 1939 Polish-German conflict, a brief synopsis by W.R. Doesn't give his whole name.
Which is interesting in itself.
That's right. Yeah, he doesn't want to get killed. So he says, to understand how the war in 1939 between Poland and Germany and consequently World War II unfolded, it is not sufficient to look at and accept the widely held view that peace-loving and weak little Poland was attacked by an ever-marauding National Socialist Germany. Rather, one must look much deeper into history. This conflict, which cost many millions of lives, did not originate with the German invasion of Poland on September 1, 1939, as is still claimed today by oversimplifying historians. It is not just a black and white story, but a complex one, and it's the way that the Jews, via British influence over Poland, manipulated Poland against Germany. Let's continue. It was not caused by the Polish mobilization of her army 2 days previous on August 30, 1939, although the mobilization of a country's army, according to international standards, is equal to a declaration of war on the neighboring country. German-Polish relations are even today poisoned by centuries-old deep-seated hatred on the Polish side. for the centuries.
Which confirms what you said.
That's right.
Which confirms what you said a couple of weeks ago, that this, even before it was called Poland, they had problems.
Yeah, that's right. For centuries, the Poles have been taught from early childhood on that Germans were evil and ought to be fought whenever there was a promise of success. Remember, the Jews had controlled Poland since 1200 A.D., Hate on such a scale as it was and still is promoted in Poland today against her westerly neighbor eventually leads to a chauvinism that knows few constraints. Now, remember those snippets we read showing the hatred of the Poles against the Germans? A totally unreasonable hatred? Okay? It's like the townspeople hating Dr. Frankenstein, but the Germans were actually hardworking people in Danzig corridor. The Poles had no reason at all to hate the Germans, none whatsoever. Anyway, this hate on such a scale is chauvinism that knows few constraints. In Poland, in Poland, as in all countries, the respective elites use the means accessible to them to shape public sentiment. Traditionally, these elites have been the Polish Catholic Church, writers, intellectuals, politicians, and the press. For a balanced understanding of the forces which moved Poland inexorably ever closer to the war against Germany, it is essential to investigate the role of these components of Polish society that have played in the past, and it's fairly easy to find abundant evidence for the above claim and to trace it from the present time back into the distant past. And then he goes through...
May I stop you?
Yeah, sure.
May I stop? Go ahead. Just finish what you're doing.
Well, I was just going to say he goes into a bunch of Polish proverbs, which demonstrates their hatred for Germans. For one being, as long as the world exists, the Pole will never be a German's brother.
Okay. You see, that's a division again.
Yeah.
I want to point that out. But the only reason I stopped you was he said that these elites, and he tells you who they are. Okay, let's look at this now. See, that's what I do. I don't just read the whole article. I stop and you know, speak on these things. Poland, okay, it says right here that these components that he's talking about, traditionally these elites have been the Polish Catholic Church. Now, what do we know about the Catholic Church? They're a Babylonian institution. The Jews are heavily entrenched in them, and Freemasonry, maybe not exactly at this time, but you know who they are. Now, the writers... Would that not be the Kahila, the scribes,
right?
The writers, the intellectuals? Who, like, let's just put this to today. Let's pretend these elites, of course, you don't even have to pretend because it is the same people. Let's look at the Polish, let's look at the Catholic Church today. We see that Lucifer is their god and all that stuff. When we look at the writers, who's the writers today? Who owns the press? It says the press is one of them, right? So we know that 96% of the press is owned by six Jews.
Right.
So we can see that that's one of the elements that caused this. And then who are the politicians today all over the world? The Jews, mostly.
Right.
I mean, yeah, and the traitors, the white race traitors. Who are the intellectuals or the ones that claim they're intellectuals? The Jews.
Jewish pornographers.
They're the
ones,
they're your talking heads that are telling you
what
to believe in your news stories. And the writers. These are all parts of the Kahila.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Okay, that's why I wanted to stop you there, because nothing's changed. It's the same element.
Yeah. Well, no,
so who caused the division between the Germans and the Polish people, their brothers? Who caused this division?
Right.
The
remember, Juden. And this is all orchestrated by the Rothschilds in London, putting out reports and orders to the various kahilas of the various nations that the Jews are operating in, such as Germany, Poland, Britain, France, etc., and Russia as well, okay? Especially Russia, because Russia was controlled by Bolshevik Jews at this point in time, okay? Totally controlled by Jews. More than any other country, as a matter of fact, Russia was controlled by Jews. So I want to drop down to... many years before the differences between Germany and Poland escalated to the point of no return, numerous diplomatic efforts were made by the German government to defuse the ever more dangerous situation the two countries were facing. Okay, so here, this report is telling us it was the Germans who tried to de-escalate the conflict. The Poles were constantly escalating it. Okay, and we're led to believe that the Germans were the ones who were the aggressors in all cases. It's
but
those evil Germans.
Find out.
Yes, okay. These efforts were all rejected by Poland. One of them comes to mind. On January 6, 1939, the German Foreign Minister von Ribbentrop met with the Polish Foreign Minister Josef Beck. Yeah, sounds German. I mean, sounds Jewish to me. Yeah, right? Josef Beck, right? Beck beer? Yes. In Munich to discuss the differences between the two countries. Von Ribbentrop proposed, quote, the following solution, the return of Danzig to Germany. In return, all of Poland's economic interests in this region would be guaranteed, and most generously at that. Germany would be given access to her province of East Prussia by means of an extraterritorial highway and rail line. In return, Germany would guarantee the corridor and the entire Polish status, in other words, a final and permanent recognition of each nation's borders. Beck replied, for the first time I am pessimistic. Particularly in the matter of Danzig, I see no possibility of cooperation. So this Danzig corridor, which was stolen from Germany by the Jews at Versailles and the nation of Poland, which did not even exist before World War I, takes a hard line in the name, in the person of Beck and says, no way, no deal. Okay,
but who is influencing? Who are we going to find out is influencing him? See, I'm going to give you a little tip ahead of time, is that you're going to find out that just in the same way as they would not allow Germany to say 2 weeks they were going to win the war, they said, we don't want any reparations, we'll just end the war, World War I. And the Jews in the UK said, no way.
Right.
And, of course, Churchill, you're going to find out that Churchill and the Jews in America and the UK are causing this man, I'm sure they're talking to this man and telling him, do not by any means negotiate with Hitler.
Right, right.
Well, and that's what we'll find out. I just want to make, I want you to understand that, you know, what's really going to happen here. See, they weren't going to let Hitler not go to war. That's probably bad English, what I just said, negative. But
that's right.
They weren't going to allow him to say, no, we don't want to go to war.
Right.
They were going to keep prodding him with the stick until he went.
Well, the economic and social treatment of the international Jew toward the German people during this time is absolutely atrocious and murderous. Okay, and it was just a continuation of the precepts of the Versailles Treaty, gone really from bad to worse, and it didn't get any better until Hitler appeared. So we have a constant chaos in Germany, and the Danzig corridor is no exception, where the Jews agitated Poles against the Germans. So even the Catholic Church, later on down, later, when their wishes came true, they actively participated in murdering unsuspecting soldiers. This is talking about Catholic priests. Cardinal Wyszynski confirmed the fact that during the war, there was not one single Polish priest who did not fight against the Germans with a weapon in his hand. Now, remember, the Jews complained that the Pope during World War II was too pro-German? Right? Give
me
a stinking break.
Both sides of it.
Right. Right. The war.
But did you notice now? Did you notice that the Germans have peacefully tried to negotiate without war, tried to stop a war in World War One, and not even ask any reparations or anything? Let's just go back home and forget about the whole thing. Let's forgive one another like you're supposed to do with your brother, right?
Yes.
No, that wasn't allowed. They wasn't allowed to do that. So you see here that he was trying to negotiate back the Danzig corridor and other parts because of what was going on. But he was trying to generously negotiate this in peaceful terms. But they would not have it. I want you to see that Germany's on the right side.
That's right. That's right. Right.
And they're negotiating peace.
Yeah. Not only did these Christian priests, and they put Christian in quotation marks, excel in rhetoric aimed at cultivating deadly hate against Germans during the pre-1939 years, they also prayed in their churches, "We pray for you. We pray to you for the great war of the peoples, O Lord." Okay.
That's so the devil.
That's
Lord.
Right. The Archbishop of Gnesen around the turn of the 13th century had the habit of calling the Germans dogheads. He criticized the bishop from Brixen that he would have preached excellently had he not been a doghead and a German. Okay? So maybe all these Polish jokes in the 20th century are payback for Polish treatment and hatred of the Germans, unfounded hatred of the German people. And that's because the Jews controlled Poland since the 1200s. The Jews are definitely behind this ethnic hatred. They incite ethnic hatred among peoples whenever they gain power.
See, so, notice how the Jews weren't standing up at that time and saying, "You're racist."
Yeah, right.
No, they've encouraged racism. Yeah.
Right.
If you whatever you want to call racism, they encourage it throughout the world. They're the ones that divide and cause hate between brothers.
Absolutely. Right? Right.
But now they're trying to be champions against that. You see,
yes.
Now they're trying to be anti-racist and, yes. Oh, we can't have racism in the world. They've always promoted racism, yes. Ladies and gentlemen. Eli, think about what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. They made these people against their own brothers, and that's racism. They would call that racism today.
Yes.
But now,
yes.
Today,
well,
they're on
selective.
The opposite side.
It's selective criticism, of course, you know. Very selective. You know, if the victims are white people, there's no problem. If the victim's black or non-white, then, oh, there's headlines, right? And we're terrible racists because some of our people have done such things, right? One more here. Between 1919 and 1921, 400,000 ethnic Germans fled their homes and crossed the German border in order to save their lives. So we can see from the very instigation of the Versailles Treaty, it was death. It was a death sentence for Germans to live in Polish territory. That's how strong the Polish hatred of the German people was, instigated by the Jews. Okay?
Did you see this quote right here?
Go ahead.
On October 20th, 1923, Stanislaus Grabski... Hey, Grabski.
Right.
It sounds like you know, Madoff with the money, Bernie
Grabski,
Madoff.
The money ski, right?
Yeah,
Gold ski.
He's probably a future right. money hedge,
money grabber, money grubber,
person.
Right? Stanislaus,
yeah,
the money
grubber. Grabski the dough
right?
And go.
Right.
Anyway, on October 1923, Stanislaus Grabski, who later was to become a minister of public worship and instruction, announced, I want you to pay attention to this closely. Listen to this. We want to base our relations on love. But there is a kind of love for one's own people and another kind for strangers. Eli, would you like to expound upon that?
Yeah, right. They're entirely...
You understand? See, you can't say that about the white people.
No.
You see, no. You see what I'm trying to say here is like Tucker Carlson had this Jew on there, and he destroyed two different Jews, the one that did the architect of the Obamacare, and then he destroyed this other Jew, right, who was hiring for a job and excluded the white man from it, right?
Right, right.
And it's amazing what's going on. These Jews are getting destroyed because he questioned them. And you know what the Jew says on there? He said a Nazi can't have an opinion. Everybody
yes.
has a right to an opinion, but a racist or a Nazi, you know, like a racist, so to speak, is what
yes.
he was saying, in other words. In other words, racist opinion, there is no racist can't have an opinion, but everybody else can
yeah.
have an opinion.
Yeah.
But a racist, you know, automatically that's nulled out.
Right.
Because he has no.
Well,
his,
only
his
whites
view
can be racist.
Is just ignored.
You know. Their definition of racism is that only whites can be racist. So, therefore, anybody else is free to say what they please. And
yes.
hateful statements like these polls are issuing in this article here.
So, but look at the statement. It's a correct statement because you really should have this. This is something, if I said this today, they'd call me a racist.
Mm-hmm.
We want to base our relations on love, but there is one kind of love for one's own people. That is true. We should love our Israelite brothers
exactly.
more than any other race.
Amen.
But today, you as a white person,
that's
if
verboten.
You do that, you're a racist.
That's a crime.
See, this is a healthy thing that he's saying here. We
yeah.
want to base relations on love, but there is one kind of love for one's own people and another kind for strangers. Is there something wrong with that? No. The percentage is decidedly too high here.
There are too many strangers.
Now he's going off on something else. I just wanted to say
yes.
that part of the statement is a correct
right.
statement.
That's
we
right.
should have more love for our own race than strangers. But many of our people in our race today have more love for strangers and have no love for their own race.
Yes.
Okay. So, but anyway, that's an important thing. So, I don't really have to go on from
that. Well, let me pick it up there because it's important historically. Posen, which had been given to Poland after the First World War, remember Poland didn't even exist before the First World War, can show us one way to reduce that percentage from 14% or even 20% to 1.5%. The foreign element will have to see it if we would not be better off elsewhere. The Polish land is exclusively for the Poles. In other words, giving the Germans a message, you better get out or something bad is going to happen. The next paragraph, the Germans in Poland are intelligent enough to realize that in the event of war, no enemy on Polish soil will get away alive. The Führer is far away, but the Polish soldiers are close, and in the woods there is no shortage of branches.
The only thing I would say about that is, when I said that statement, it only applies to your own race.
Sure.
Now, the Poles are our brothers, so we're supposed to love them. They're our own kind, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
So in other words, the Jews had turned brother against brother and divided them against themselves and made a long history of this, like the Hatfields and McCoys syndrome.
Yes. Yes.
So somebody encouraged that.
Somebody encouraged it, yes.
To go on.
Yeah, somebody was providing weapons to both sides, all right?
Yeah, they shouldn't be killing their brother Germans.
That's right.
If there was a war, they should decently take them and bring them to the German border and hand them over to the Germans, not kill their own brothers.
Right. Yes.
See, I was just meaning that statement
that
understood. You should have a special love for your own race, and
Amen.
Strangers should be secondary.
But his inciting of that principle was to arouse Poles against Germans, right? Let me just read these last two paragraphs here, because this shows, and this gives the real reason for why World War II started, and then we can go to Churchill. We are ready to make a pact with the devil if he will help us in the battle against Germany. Here, against Germany, not just Hitler. In an upcoming war, German blood will be spilled in rivers such as all of world history has never seen before. This
and
is Stanislaus.
Was,
yeah, this is the Minister of Public Worship and Instruction, folks, on October 1923. Poland's decision.
Now, guess
of,
what? Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know you were going
last
ahead.
Quote. Poland's decision of August 30, 1939, that was the basis for a general mobilization, marked a turning point in the history of Europe. It forced Hitler to wage a war at a time when he hoped to gain further unbloody victories. Okay? So it was Poland that initiated hostilities with these attacks upon ethnic Germans in the totally unwarranted, brutal attacks upon the Germans in the Danzig Corridor. And, they were expecting Hitler to stand by idly and just let it continue? Over to
you. Now, you have to realize the position of Germany at this time. Hitler didn't want to go to war. In other words, the nation is on a high right now.
Yes.
It had come from eating out of garbage cans, as we have said, and it was at the bottom. Everybody had lost their businesses. They were starving to death. The money had been all ruined. There was sexual depravity everywhere. Now all of a sudden they had racial pride. Why mm-hmm. would you want to go to war?
Right.
I mean,
right.
It's a time of celebration. The German people are a very happy people. And they were in step and they were peaceful and they were, getting it together. Why would you want to go to war at that point? You're celebrating. It's time to party. We win.
Yeah.
Why would we want
brats.
To go to war and lose what we just gained?
Yeah, beer and brats. Life is good.
Well,
right?
You know what I mean? The
sure.
sooner you go to war, the sooner you have a chance to lose it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay,
right.
So that you got to think about that point. But number one, in the previous statement, I know you want to go on, but I want you to understand what his quote said. He said, "We are ready to make a pact with the devil if he will help us in the battle
right.
against Germany."
Mm-hmm.
Well, they already had made a pact with the devil.
Yeah, the Jews.
They made a pact with the devil's offspring.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. They had made this pact a long time before that with the devil. Unknowingly, he thinks he's probably being a wise guy and thinks there is no such thing as the devil.
Right. Right.
But they had literally made a pact with the devil a long time ago when they decided to hate their brothers.
Yeah.
You know, he who hates, what does it say biblically, Eli? It says that he who hates his brother
right.
is cut off. You're
right.
cut off, brother.
Amen.
So
Amen.
They already made literally they had made a pact with the devil.
Right.
You notice that when the Germans were in the territory of the Polish territory, they weren't harassing and beating the crap and raping people in the Polish right. Country.
No, they weren't doing
it. It was the
like
very
that.
Opposite.
Exactly.
So where was the hate coming from? The hate wasn't coming from the German people. The hate was coming from the Polish people.
Yes. One more thing from this article. Again, this is Wintersonnenwende.com. Outstanding article. He about the middle of the article, he quotes the American professor Dr. Burton Klein, a Jewish economist, wrote in his book Germany's Economic Preparations for War, quote, Germany produced butter as well as cannons, and much more butter and much fewer cannons than was generally assumed. The overall state of the German war economy was not that of a nation geared towards total war, but rather that of a national economy mobilized at first only for a small and locally restricted wars and on which only later succumbed to the pressure of military necessity after it had been an incontrovertible fact that war was coming. For instance, in the fall of 1939, the German preparations for provision with steel, oil and other important raw materials were anything but adequate for an intensive engagement with the great powers. One has only to compare Mr. Klein's observations with what Mr. Bavendam wrote about the British preparations for a major war at the same time, and the blurred picture that is painted by historians becomes a much more transparent. The Germans were not the ones to provoke World War II. And I might add, it was the British who made all kinds of promises to Poland that should war erupt, the British would come to Poland's aid, which they never did. They sold Poland out to the communists.
What's new?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that means, what does that mean? What does that translate to? They sold out Poland to the Jews. And
that's right.
Why wouldn't they? The Jew-K is controlled by Jews.
That's
this
right.
is what Hitler was going to save the Jew-K from. This is what Hitler was going to do. They were going to go in after they won the war if we hadn't gone in there. And
yes.
The American people didn't want to go into the war. They didn't care. They didn't want anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
But if we had not gone to the war, Germany would, they had all the names of the Freemasons in the UK and all
right.
the lodges, and they were going to destroy it.
Yes.
Now, I don't mean bomb it. I mean they were going to go in there and get those people out. Who are those people today? They're running the justice system. They're running
yeah.
the police. They're running the government. They're running the monarchy.
Right.
And they're under slavery. Because they didn't let, the Germans couldn't go in there. Let me read you this from the same article.
Okay.
Hitler, of course, it's down a little further, and it says, Hitler, of course, knew this very well, okay? Speaking of, I suppose I should just go back for a second.
Yeah.
It says,
well,
besides Chamberlain,
yeah. right.
there were others in influential and powerful positions in England who were much more outspoken for their wishes. Winston Churchill, for instance, said before the House of Commons on October 5th, 1938, but there can never be a friendship between the British, get this word, democracy. Oh, the British is now a democracy.
Yeah,
so
right?
there can never be, this is Churchill saying this.
No,
a
it's a monarchy. Sorry.
Yeah, oh,
that's
no,
a
no,
lie.
It's a democracy, he says.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, but, and that's what, isn't that what, where we
actually,
got it from?
Actually, Germany
FBI,
was more of a democracy than Britain. Right?
Yes.
Go ahead. Yes.
The New Deal, it's called.
Yes.
Divide the people up. Okay, so anyway, let me finish. Winston Churchill, for instance, said before the House of Commons on October 5th, 1938, but there can never be a friendship between the British democracy and the Nazi power. That power which spurns Christians' ethics, like as if a Jew cares about Christians'
yeah,
ethics,
right?
Which cheers its onward course by barbarous paganism.
Wow,
there it is.
Right.
Which vaunts the spirit of aggression and conquest, which derives strength and perverted pleasure from persecution. Are you hearing this?
Yeah.
And
it's all lies.
As we've seen,
it's all lies.
With pitiless brutality, the threat of murderous force.
Now, we just read a lie, a huge fat whopper by Winston Churchill, told because the Jews control him. The Jews got control of Churchill because he had gambling debts and drinking debts.
But his mother is Jenny Jerome.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So he's Jewish anyway. But remember, in the 1920s, he stated that the Soviet Union was run by international Jews, right? So somewhere along the line, he had to make a conversion of anti-Jewish to pro-Jewish.
Well, right? It's a game they play. You sure. know, good cop, bad cop.
Right?
Let me just finish
one
person. What Hitler said. Let me Go finish ahead. What with this whole statement, because this is
yes.
in, he made this speech in Saarbrücken on right. October 9th, 1938. So it said, Hitler, of course, knew this very well about this, Churchill yeah. said. He said, in Saarbrücken, or Brücken, on October 9th, 1938, this is what Hitler said. All it would take would be for Mr. Duff Cooper or Mr. Eden or Mr. Churchill to come to power in England instead of Chamberlain, and we know very well that it would be the goal of these men to immediately start a new world war. They do not even try to disguise their intents. They state them openly.
And, of course, Chamberlain is smeared by historians as being a weak person because he tried to avoid war. Okay?
Yes, of course. Of course, of course. Mm-hmm. See, this is the way these Jews have always worked. In other words, they wanted this war. They were going to have this war, whether they had to buy it or whatever they had to do right. to make it happen. So they used their influence in Poland. We see this. You know, we're probably not going to get to this till next week, the fact about Winston Churchill. But we can do, you know, talk a little about Winston Churchill, just his legacy next week, I would think.
Okay,
and prove that he started the war. I mean, because we're really getting down. We could find some other things here to read still in this article. It goes on.
Oh, yeah, it's an outstanding
like
article.
Right here. As we all know, the British government under Chamberlain gave Poland the guarantee that England would come to its aid if Poland should be attacked. This was on March 31st, 1939. Its purpose was to incite Poland to escalate its endeavors for war against Germany.
Right.
It happened as planned. Now, we read you what they were doing by going into those kindergarten places and doing all
right.
the things they were doing that, you know, were supposedly Nazi people
right.
doing those kinds of things.
Right.
Well, it really wasn't that way at all. So in other words, you see it right here. They said that they would protect Poland if Poland was attacked. This on March 31st, 1939, its purpose was to incite Poland to escalate its endeavors for war against Germany.
That's right.
It happened as planned. England declared war on Germany on September 3rd, 1939, but not on the Soviet Union, who also attacked Poland. Yeah. And this is proof enough that it was England's and Chamberlain's intention in the first place to make war on Germany. They're saying Chamberlain here. Wow.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. But obviously, most people forget, the historians also forget, that the Soviet Union attacked Poland from the east while the Germans were attacking Poland from the west. So why not make war against the Soviet Union if their allegiance allegiance to Poland is to be held up? Okay.
Well, it's a bastion of communism. That's why, Eli,
that's
because
right.
Uncle Joe's over there.
And right.
A year before the end of the World War I, they had just taken over. The Jews had just taken over Russia, stolen all the Tsar's money so they could use that to perpetuate the war and to pay for Russia's buildup for the war. And, of course, Russia was going to be get divided, half of Europe or something like that.
Right.
At least half of Germany, at least half of Poland at the end of the war.
Right.
So, of course, the Jews had a great interest in this.
The bottom line is that Poland was being set up by the Jews at the Bank of England and Jews worldwide to instigate the war against Germany, giving an excuse to start World War II. Okay, and ultimately give Poland to Bolshevik Russia. Okay, well, Poland was absolutely set up.
Okay, go ahead.
That's it. Poland was absolutely set up. This was the plan from the beginning. Back to you.
All I was going to say was you can see that they really weren't too happy with Chamberlain in the same way they weren't happy with Taft in
right.
America. So they made
or
sure
Hoover,
they got their man in
or
there.
Or Hoover, right?
Yes. Yeah. What I mean is in England, it seems like Miss Theresa May, I don't know who the hell voted her in.
Right.
I don't know where she came from. Who is she?
She crawled out
Even
of a hole
English
somewhere.
People don't know who she is.
Right.
I didn't seem to have anything to do with her being in the place she's in right now.
Just like
now,
Eisenhower.
The same way,
Eisenhower. Who the hell is Eisenhower?
The Jewish president.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Eisenhower was lower on the totem pole than 40. There were 40 other generals more qualified than Eisenhower. Why was Eisenhower picked by the Jew FDR? Because Eisenhower
himself
Jewish.
Said that right. This guy was an incompetent.
Right. Right. So again,
but what I'm trying to say to you is you can see what happened here is in World War I, they got Woodrow Wilson in place for the war. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, when you're setting up for World War II, at the end of World War I, they got Uncle Joe over there.
Right.
Okay. They got him in place.
And
for
they got
World
Churchill
War
in Britain and
now,
FDR here.
Right.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, this guy,
all
Churchill,
three
is
with
in.
Jewish blood. All three of them. Jewish blood.
See,
yes.
Hitler said that three different men would get in here and it wouldn't matter. They would all put the war in. Listen to what it said. He said all it would take would be for Mr. Duff Cooper or Mr. Eden or Mr. Churchill to come to power in England instead of Chamberlain. And we know very well that that would be the goal of this man to immediately start a new world war. So they got their Jew into the office.
Remember,
they got
it.
Churchill in.
Yeah.
Right?
Remember, Time magazine gave Adolf Hitler Man of the Year award.
That was 1933, yeah.
1933, because he had created an economic miracle. But then when he started throwing the Jews out, the same year, 1933, is when international Jewry declared war on Hitler, on Germany. Okay.
Well, may I remind you of something of recent? We did talk about this before, but it's worth mentioning. That Netanyahu, the Jews have always told us now that the Jews, that the Germans wanted to exterminate the Jews off the earth completely.
Yeah.
Now, listen to that again, Eli. Listen to that again. What is really happening? Who wants to exterminate who off whom? Who wants to exterminate whom off the earth? Really?
Yeah.
Really, the Jews want to exterminate the white race, but they called that first. Do you understand? Here's the technique again.
Right. Right.
Understand? They're claiming that they're going to be that the white race, Hitler, anybody that's white and supreme white wants to exterminate the Jews, when in reality, the Jews want to exterminate us off the planet. Yeah.
Right.
And they've even said they want to exterminate Germany completely. Germany must perish.
Amen.
They still have this resounding in the German government today that the German population should end. They should be breeded out of existence.
Yes.
So see how they claim? But Mr. Netanyahu all of a sudden did a backpedal. I just want to remind you
and
this.
He admitted that Hitler did not want to exterminate the Jews. Yes.
He said Hitler just wanted to expel them from his country.
Amen.
Which is the truth.
Which is the truth.
So now he's telling the truth. I told you why, what the purpose is.
Right.
But I want you to understand that they've been touting the very opposite thing all the way through.
Exactly.
Now, the Jews are acting like they're upset with Netanyahu for saying this, but they know what the game is. That's just wrestling.
It's Jew talk.
They know why he's doing that.
Right.
Now,
right.
You just had another rabbi come out and say the same thing. Remember that video?
Uh-huh, right. Yeah.
Well, he was saying how Hitler wasn't what they thought, and this rabbi's all of a sudden saying that the Germany and Hitler wasn't what they said it was. And
right. But the Holocaust industry is just going to keep rolling on no matter what, right? That's not going to affect the Holocaust industry. They'll keep cranking out fiction after fiction after fiction, pretending that it really happened, right? And we know it didn't happen.
What are those fictions, Eli?
Huh?
The fable of the Jews.
Right. Yeah, right.
What's another fable of the Jews? All races are created equal.
See,
it sounds good, like I said, but when you look
liberty,
at it in the
equality,
realistic
fraternity.
Terms, it doesn't translate, does it?
No, of course not. Of course not. But here, in the rest of this paragraph, thus World War II was arranged by a complicity between Britain and Poland. It was not Hitler's war. It was England's and Poland's war. The Poles were merely stooges, as we have been saying all along. Some of them knew it, too. Jules Laskowitz, the Polish ambassador to Paris, for instance, who on March 29, 1939, told his foreign minister in Warsaw, quote, "It is childishly naive and also unfair to suggest to a nation in a position like Poland to compromise its relations with such a strong neighbor as Germany and to expose the world to the catastrophe of war for no other reason than to pander to the wishes of Chamberlain's domestic policy." So they're still blaming Chamberlain. Maybe Hitler had
Hitler
a different opinion.
Hitler says differently, though, as you noticed.
Yeah. So, but I think maybe Poland figured out they were being set up by Britain in any case, right? Whether it's Chamberlain or Churchill. It would even be more naive to assume that the Polish government did not understand the true purpose of this maneuver and its consequences, unquote.
All right, let me point this out for you.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I always see this so clearly. You have the visible who takes the heat, and you have the invisible. The mm-hmm. visible here is Britain and Poland.
Right. Right.
The invisible is the Jews that are in control of Britain and Poland.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay? See, that's how it works. It works that way with the Senate. It works that way with the governments. You see, the government takes, the politicians take the heat for all these dirty, dastardly things they're doing, and rightly so, but it's not, they're the visible.
Mm-hmm.
And the invisible is the Federal Reserve and Jews that are paying these senators in the background.
Mm-hmm.
The invisible is always the one that's responsible, and they don't take any of the heat. You don't even know they're there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean,
yes.
We do, but most people don't. Britain and Poland are the ones that started this war. Like I said, just use it from a common sense point of view.
Right.
If you were on the bottom of the ground, like I said a little earlier, and you were eating out of garbage cans, and now you had plenty of food, you had your businesses back, you had your homes back, you got rid of these filthy Jews, the debauchery was gone, your economy had gone from the bottom to the very top, why the heck would you want to go to war?
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason to.
Right. Right. So we see that this traditional Polish animosity towards Germans, which goes back hundreds of years and which is primarily fomented by the Roman Catholic Church in Poland, because a lot of Germans were Protestants. If they happened, there was a plague. Well, let's see here. For instance, in the 18th century, the Catholic Germans, Catholic Germans from Bamberg who had followed their bishop and immigrated to Poland after the plague were forcibly Polonized. They were denied German church services, German confession, and the German catechism, and re-educated to become Poles. So in other words, you know, they were forced to be integrated. You know, that's not too much to ask, you know, but they came from Germany because of the plague. They sought refuge there. But even up into the present day, Poles still have this hatred of Germans. Okay.
I was hoping you'd read a little earlier there where it says,
okay.
60 years have passed since Poland got her wish. Germany lost large additional areas to Poland. Today, these regions can hardly be compared to what they originally were. Houses, farms, and infrastructure. See, there it is right there. That
right.
See, I'm glad I read that.
Uh-huh.
See, Germany already has a problem feeding itself. So
right.
I believe when the Jews split up the land, like you said, France got those farmlands because Germany's
yes.
mostly trees.
Yes.
Now I understand. See what we just discovered right there? They made sure that the Germany would be even more hungry and
right.
need to rely on the middleman, the internationalist, interdependence to get their food, because
right.
now their farmland was given away. See what it says right here?
Yeah,
houses,
right.
farms, and infrastructure, agriculture, even the dikes of the Oder River are decaying. Financial help from Germany goes to Poland as if nothing had happened between the two countries.
Okay,
the
again, proving how
Germans.
Evil the Germans are, right? It's those evil Germans.
Yes.
Oh, those evil Germans. They're just full of hate.
Yes. Absolutely. The 2
yeah.
million Germans still remaining in Poland are largely forgotten by their brothers in the West. They now suffer the same fate as the other Germans did in Poland in the earlier times.
Okay, which is
and
where
then
I
you
quoted
read from there. Okay?
Yeah, so this animosity, of the Polish people toward the Germans is totally unwarranted. Totally unwarranted. And it still festers even today. But I would say both Poland and Germany have been grounded to dust by the Jewish war machine. And they're trying to do the same to America. So it's
and
about time.
And we also see that not all of our people are equal. Germany said they had the best blood. I agree that the tribe of Judah is number one.
Right.
You see what it says in that paragraph. It says that Germany lost large additional areas to Poland. Today, these regions can hardly be compared to what they originally were. Of course, that means when they were German.
Mm-hmm.
Houses, farms, and infrastructure and agriculture, even the dikes of the Oder River are decaying. The Polish people can't keep that up like the Germans could?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
See, there's no equality even there between white people, and you're trying to convince me that all races are equal?
Yes. Right. So this article is primarily about Polish chauvinism against the Germans, but you know, there's little talk about Jews in this article, but still, it's very accurate historical from the ethnic perspective between Germans, Jews, and Brits. Doesn't really say much about French or Russia in here, but we know that the Jews excel at fomenting hatred among ethnic groups, and they have excelled at fomenting hatred between Germany and Poland for centuries. Okay? And without this deliberate fomentation of hatred, this divide-and-conquer tactic, and the Jewish dialectic, right, create a problem, right, propose the solution to the problem, and then voila, you've got a war, right? That's how the Jews operate,
well,
folks.
That, actually, the solution is the war.
Okay.
So what you do is you create a problem so that the people will cry out for that war, the very solution that you wanted in the first place. It's the same thing as the guns.
Well, the
you
problem
want to
was,
take the guns away from the people in America.
Okay,
so
we're
they're
almost
passing
out of time.
Out guns to all the Negroes, right?
Yes, that's right.
And it's
right.
creating a big gun problem across the nation, right?
Okay, we're
so
going to have to pick this up.
So they're waiting for you as an American
right?
to cry out for it.
We're going to have to pick this up next time. We're just about out of time, folks. Thanks for listening. You've been hearing the truth about World War II right here on Eurofolk Radio. Thanks for listening.
When you're riding after rattlesnakes, you gotta be tough. You gotta be rough. You gotta shoot straight. Be on the lookout. The James Gang is back in town, and they're meaner than ever. There's Brother Eli. He stomped down many a snake in his day, and he ain't done yet. His younger brother, David.